This audio recording is a resource of the Center for Bioethical Reform, CBR. This and other resources can be found at www.abortionno.org. This essay is by Greg Cunningham, CBR Executive Director, and is read by CBR staff, July 2010. Dear pro-life friend, on June 9, 2010, a 20-year-old Alabama girl wrote to us to save our abortion photos. Quote, "I think it is a great way to inform people that this injustice is really happening and we all need to do something about it," end quote. Do something are the operative words here, but in fact, abortion pictures are such a great way to inform people that on June 1st, 2010, a 32-year-old woman from Honolulu, who had also seen our abortion pictures, told us that she had been, quote, "browsing through the internet to decide if I should have an abortion. Now I don't want it, even if it means losing my man," end quote. Our pictures move this mother to spare the life of her baby, but CBR's abortion photos also inspire viewers to fight for the lives of other people's babies. On May 15, 2010, a 15-year-old girl from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, told us, quote, "I knew abortion was always wrong, but visiting this website makes me want to do something about it. I can barely look at the pictures," end quote. On June 24, 2010, a 19-year-old girl from Kyle, Texas, saw our photos and wrote to say, quote, "It's time people stand up and tell one another just exactly what is going on. No one ever wants to see it, images, videos, etc., but they will condone it. It is time we all realize the horrible impact we are making if we keep our mouths shut," end quote. On July 10th, 2010, a 27-year-old from Albuquerque, New Mexico, wrote to say, quote, "This website has inspired me to take more action regarding this matter," end quote. Thank God these terrible images stir so many people to action. But among the many who haven't seen the truth, there is a crippling epidemic of pacifism in the church and in our movement and among our political leaders, and it is killing babies. In that connection, I recently received a note from a priest who complained that CBR's mailings were becoming too political and too militaristic. Sadly, he was speaking for alarming numbers of pro-lifers who still don't understand the need to fight back against the war by which unborn children are being savaged. They still don't understand that politics made abortion lawful, and with God's help, politics will make it unlawful. God has given Americans extraordinary liberties. He expects us to use them in pursuit of justice. But many believers would appease the dark forces which God has so clearly called us to fight. On June 14, 2010, Weekly Standard published a story of pro-life surrender which touted the presidential prospects of Governor Mitch Daniels, titled, "Ride Along with Mitch." According to the Indiana governor, quote, "The next president, whoever he is, would have to call a truce on the so-called social issues. We're going to just have to agree to get along for a while until the economic issues are resolved," end quote. Does that mean Mr. Obama is going to have to agree to get along with the unborn babies he has been killing? Or does that mean that pro-lifers are going to have to agree to get along with Mr. Obama while he continues to kill them? That is the sort of heartless calculation we've come to expect from a pro-abortion libertarian. But the article implausibly asserts that Daniels is pro-life himself, and he gets high marks from conservative religious groups in his state. This begs the question, what sort of conservative religious group would give high marks to a guy who thinks deficits are more evil than deaths? He might be one guy who could get away with it, said Kurt Smith, head of the Indiana Family Institute, who knows Daniels since the 1980s. He has a deep faith, he's totally pro-life, and he walks the talk. And in an acute situation like the one we're in now with the debt, he might get away with the truce for a year or two. But CBR isn't going to let him get away with it, not even for a moment. Does Mr. Smith really believe that Mr. Obama would observe Governor Daniels' ceasefire by suspending the baby killing in which Mr. Obama revels? Or does he expect us to unilaterally suspend our baby saving while Mr. Obama continues to wage war on our children? With all due respect for pragmatic evangelicals who are ready to bargain away the lives of these babies, I can assure you that CBR won't stand down till Mr. Obama is forced to stop the killing. Then a second profile in pacifism and treachery appeared in a USAtoday.com story, June 11, 2010, headlined, "Florida Governor Charlie Crist Vetoes Ultrasound Bill." It quoted another governor who disingenuously claimed to be pro-life. Quote, "This bill places an inappropriate burden on a woman seeking to terminate a pregnancy," Chris said in his veto message. The article noted that the bill would have, quote, "required most women to have an ultrasound before having an abortion, unless the woman could prove she was a victim of rape, incest, domestic violence, or human trafficking, Women could choose not to see the ultrasound or hear a description of it, end quote. How could a safe, inexpensive ultrasound scan, at which a mother cannot be compelled to look and to whose description she cannot be forced to listen, constitute an inappropriate burden? It is indeed a burden, but it is not inappropriate. Mr. Crist's opportunistic political posturing is trivializing abortion by sparing the mother's conscience at the expense of her baby's life. The governor and his new best friends in the abortion industry hate this bill because it bluntly forces mothers and their abortionists to stop pretending. Assuming that she has a functioning conscience, a mother who looks at the ultrasound would be morally obligated to abandon her abortion, or forced to kill a baby she can clearly see is not the blob of tissue her lying abortionist told her it was. If, however, she is afraid to look at the ultrasound before aborting, she is effectively admitting that she knew all along it wasn't just a blob of tissue, and that her motive for averting her gaze was her desire to avoid the endless recollection of her child's first and only baby picture. Whether she looks or looks away, she would never be able to convincingly rationalize that she had no way of knowing what she was doing. For most mothers and fathers, denial is the great facilitator in every decision to kill a baby. Intellectual honesty is Planned Parenthood's ablest enemy, and an ultrasound, viewed or ignored, means no more head games. It wouldn't save every baby, but it would make abortion decisions far less delusional. Equally tragic, the vetoed measure, quote, included language that legislative Republicans wrote to prevent what they considered the possibility of federal funding being used for abortion in Florida, along with some provisions intended to thwart President Obama's national health care program, end quote. So now Florida taxpayers will get to fund the cost of butchering babies whose lives might have been saved by a revelatory ultrasound. MSNBC.com also carried a story on June 11, 2010, headlined, Crist Vetoes Florida Ultrasound Measure, with this, quote, Individuals hold strong personal views on the issue of life, as do I, Crist wrote. However, personal views should not result in laws that unwisely expand the role of government and coerce people to obtain medical tests or procedures that are not medically necessary, end quote. How about morally necessary? If the abortion isn't medically necessary, how can Governor Crist logically complain that the ultrasound isn't medically necessary? And how can a simple, non-invasive diagnostic procedure be other than medically necessary when it is so likely to save countless lives? One also wonders what strong personal views would motivate the veto of a life-saving ultrasound bill, unless the governor strongly believes that troubling a mother's conscience is a greater evil than taking a baby's life. Not only has Governor Crist rushed to comply with Governor Daniels' call for a truce, which only pro-lifers are obligated to observe, but the article further revealed that, quote, Crist has removed anti-abortion language from his campaign website. Why not, after also abandoning the Republican Party to improve his prospects for election to the U.S. Senate? Mr. Crist has been all over the moral map on this issue, but he has now made his pact with the devil. The governor wants a Senate job badly enough to trade his soul and Florida's children to get it. We will hold Mr. Crist accountable for this veto with the billboard trucks we are even now driving in Florida. Perhaps he will change his mind. Why is our side so frequently so eager to appease the forces of darkness? Politico.com, July 5, 2010, published a post titled, The GOP's Passion Problem. It reported that, quote, the party, which has used judicial nominations to stoke the culture wars for more than a decade, appears to have lost its fighting edge on judges, end quote. The writer added that, quote, now some conservatives worry that if Republicans can't gin up a real battle over a left-leaning high court nominee from President Barack Obama in an election year, how can they be expected to grind out fights on dozens of lower court nominees who are getting lifetime appointments to the federal bench? And Mr. Obama is spoiling for a fight. On June 7, 2010, Politico.com reported a related story titled Obama Reshaping Judiciary Landscape. The writer says of Obama's 70 appellate and district court nominees, 44% are female and 43% are minorities, according to recent analysis by the Alliance for Justice, a liberal advocacy group. The Alliance for Justice praises the president for the diversity of his nominees, but as a group, they are totally lacking philosophical diversity. Diversity is code for viciously pro-abortion, and Mr. Obama is using race and gender bias to ensure that his judges will all be left-wing ideologues, far outside the judicial mainstream. Did then-Senator Obama lose his fighting edge when confronted with President Bush's Supreme Court nominees, WashingtonExaminer.com, May 17, 2009, answered that question with a piece headlined, "Obama's Senate Records on Roberts, Alito Offer Clues to What's Ahead for His High Court Nominee." The story opens, quote, "As a senator, Barack Obama said, President George W. Bush's Supreme Court nominees, John Roberts and Sam Alito, were clearly qualified. He voted against them anyway. Mr. Obama is just as eager to fight the abortion wars beyond our shores." AmericanSpectator.com, July 13, 2010, reported an article titled, "Yes, We Kenya," which condemned Mr. Obama's decision to send Joe Biden to Kenya to bribe the leaders of Mr. Obama's ancestral home with offers of foreign aid if they approve a proposed pro-abortion constitution. Congressman Chris Smith notes that Biden's heavy-handed intervention may well be against federal law. Since 2006, the law has said no foreign assistance funds may be used to lobby for or against abortion. But since when did Mr. Obama allow his fighting agenda to be derailed by so trifling an impediment as a legal prohibition? The pro-aborts are fighters. The article reminds us that Secretary of State Hillary Clinton had hardly taken her oath of office before she told a House Foreign Affairs Committee hearing early in 2009 that sexual and reproductive rights and health were a major goal of the Obama administration. She assured House members she would do all in her power to help overturn foreign countries' pro-life laws. And CBR is doing all in our power to stop her and to stop Mr. Biden. We have shipped abortion DVDs and photo signs to our Kenyan colleagues who asked us for these pictures as a means through which to defeat the proposed pro-abortion constitution for whose approval Mr. Obama is unlawfully lobbying. While cowardly Republicans frequently give him a pass to avoid a fight, Mr. Obama never gives anyone a pass. CNN.com, June 8, 2010, reported a story headline, "Obama Looking for Who's Ass to Kick." He used the 2010 National Prayer Breakfast to condemn politics as an all-or-nothing sport, which leaves each side little room to negotiate with the other. But on January 28, 2010, just a few days earlier, Kathleen Parker posted a column titled, "Obama's Fight Club." At a meeting of his middle-class task force, Obama used the word fight or fighting four times to describe his intentions in a seven-minute speech. She then says, quote, "In Ohio last week, the president used fight words more than 20 times," end quote. The president fights his opponents, but insists that their resistance is evidence of some character defect. At the prayer breakfast, he spoke of brotherhood and humility. He condemned this erosion of civility in the public square, which poisons the well of public opinion and sows division and distrust among our citizens. Then, the Christian Science Monitor said he vented his frustration with the Supreme Court's ruling in its campaign finance reform ruling, and that he did so in unusually testy language. A few days later, the Washington Times, January 28, 2010, published a story headlined, "Alito Disparages Obama's Court Criticism," which says that during his State of the Union address, quote, "the president had taken the unusual step of publicly scolding the High Court with some of its robed members seated before him in the House." LegalTimes.typad.com said on January 27, 2010, in a post headlined, "High Court is Rare Topic for State of the Union Speeches," that President Barack Obama's pointed criticism was beyond unusual. He has no respect for tradition, and our friends on the court may be among the few officials with the fortitude to fight him on abortion. LATimes.com, July 6, 2010, ran a story titled, "Obama and Supreme Court May Be on Collision Course." The subhead said, quote, "The president's agenda on health care and financial regulation sets the stage for a clash with the Supreme Court's conservative majority." The court's decisions historically reflect public opinion, and CBR continues to do all in its power to influence voter attitudes on abortion. It is vital that we stay on the offensive because, as Frank Beckman at the Detroit News titled his column on January 29, 2010, "Obama doesn't quit on pushing same agenda." He observed concerning the president's State of the Union address, quote, "When he said, 'I don't quit,' he meant he truly pushed every single agenda item that has led to America's growing dissatisfaction with his presidency. He plays by his own set of rules and imposes another on his adversaries. He will stop at nothing, and he has plenty of unprincipled company among pro-abortion, do whatever it takes liberals." Salon.com, July 3, 2010, carried an article titled, "In defending the late West Virginia senator's approach to politics, he might have been justifying his own." It says, pro-abortion Bill Clinton's eulogy of pro-abortion Robert Byrd earlier today is getting some attention because the former president addressed Byrd's notorious early career Klan membership. The former president explained it this way. Quote, I'll tell you what it means. He was a country boy from the hills and haulers of West Virginia. He was trying to get elected. Salon adds, quote, but to hear Clinton tell it, Byrd's Klan membership, and more broadly, the ghastly record on racial issues that marked his first 3 decades in Congress, was more the product of a cynical career calculation. He knew it was wrong, but figured it would help him get ahead. Sounds just like abortion and the unprincipled politicians who promote it. This is why CBR's publications are political and militaristic. Ecclesiastes 3:8 teaches that there is a time for war, and this is incontestably that time. When tens of millions of our children are being tortured to death, our nation is clearly under assault, and more Christians had better start acting like it. We thank God for your willingness to stand with us. We pray you will exhort your friends and families to join us. God will judge our refusal to join the battle. Lord bless. Greg Cunningham, Executive Director. P.S. On July 21st, 2010, we received a message from a 26-year-old woman from Canton, Ohio. She had just seen our abortion photos and wrote to say, quote, I had never seen images or videos of abortion until I found this site. She then explains that, quote, I never realized just how horrible it really was. We are losing the abortion wars because so many people so fail to grasp how evil abortion and its advocates actually are. With your help, CBR works to cure this lack of awareness every day by showing thousands of new viewers the horror of abortion and the evil of our opponents. Please pray for those opponents, too. This concludes the recording of Greg Cunningham's letter for July 2010. For more information on this and other topics, go to www.abortionno.org.